Hello, friends. Welcome to Catholic Sphere. Each week, we have a different host and a different focus as we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe. I'm your host for this week, Johnette Williams. Today's topic is scientism, its influence in our contemporary culture, and its potential impact on our future. Dr. Stacy Trasenkos is a science and theology professor who's joining us from Budapest, Hungary today. She is author of the book Particles of Faith, A Catholic Guide to Navigating Science, and it's a fascinating and insightful read. Father Dwight Longenecker is a prolific author and priest in the Diocese of Greenville, South Carolina. Among the books he has written, and there's many of them, Beheading Hydra, A Radical Plan for Christians in an Atheistic Age, helps us understand the necessity of speaking the truth even when it's uncomfortable or inconvenient. We also have with us Dr. Ray Grundy, a clinical psychologist. He is the host of EWTN's Living Right with Dr. Ray and EWTN Radio's The Doctor Is In. His book, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside-Down World, is a must-have for parents today. I invite you to go out to EWTN's religious catalog. That's EWTNRC.com. You can access these books and many of the other opportunities that are available for you there. Well, I want to welcome all three of you to Catholic Sphere today. We're going to be talking about scientism. It's an important topic because it has impacted our culture so tremendously in a lot of ways, and it's important for us to understand the background out of which scientism, as we see it today, arises. So I want to start off with the definition, and Dr. Stacy, I'm taking this right from your book, Particles of Truth, and you define scientism for us. You state that scientism is the belief that only knowledge obtained from scientific research is valid, and beliefs deriving from religion should be discounted. It is an extreme or excessive faith in science or scientists. And I think that's an important definition for us to consider. And I want to run right over to you, Father Dwight, now. In your book, Beheading Hydra, A Radical Plan for Christians in an Atheistic Age, you talk about scientism as one of the isms, one of the manifestations, the heads of this hydra that is in our midst today. And I'd like for you to share with us the fact that at one point in time, there was not this disconnect between science and religion, science and a belief in a God who is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent.
The scientific method developed in the Middle Ages within the Catholic faith, and within the practice of the Catholic faith, some of the greatest of the first scientists were actually Catholic religious, who combined their faith in a creator with a study of creation. After the Protestant Reformation and then the Enlightenment, there became a divide between the created order and the creator. And the creator was pushed out more and more, and people began to study science separated from a belief in the creator. And when that happened, scientism was the natural next step. I should say also, in addition to Stacy's definition, that scientism is actually an offshoot of materialism. Materialism being the belief that only the material world matters, and in fact, the only reality is the material world. There is no spiritual realm. There is no invisible realm. There's no angels and demons in heaven and hell. The material realm is all there is. What you see is what you get. Now, an offspring from that, of course, is scientism, which says, as Stacy's well defined, that scientism is that the only valid form of belief or the only valid form of knowledge is that which is scientifically verified. We're not against science and we're not against technology, but we're against a philosophy which says that the only form of knowledge is scientific knowledge.
Thank you, Father Dwight. And Stacy, how does that get lived out in the academic world? Here you are. You are a chemist. You have taught that particular discipline. How does this whole notion of this philosophy, this belief system, become something that becomes part and parcel of the way in which scientists think or are taught to think?
There's so much information, there's so much knowledge in science. I mean, what we know about the atom today is vastly different than what was understood 50 years ago and definitely 100 years ago. And I don't think a lot of people living today realize the scientific explosion that we're living in. I didn't have a cell phone when I was growing up, and I've seen technology change. We all have seen it change drastically in our lifetimes. But when you're studying chemistry or physics or biology, one of the STEM disciplines in college, you're not required to take philosophy courses. Big shocker, right? You're not required to take theology courses. You're not required to think about anything but learning the science. And it's difficult because there's lots of equations, lots of derivations, lots of rules, lots of things you have to memorize and struggle with. And the knowledge becomes so specific. You know, it's like a spike. You know a whole lot about very little, but you don't have any other way to deal with what's going on in your life. And I actually lived that way. I mean, I actually couldn't think about anything spiritual because I didn't have the language or the understanding. I just didn't know how. And I literally remember looking at my baby, thinking, you're a really wonderful, highly complex composite system of atoms and molecules, but I don't understand what I feel for you. It must just be my brain.
Johnette, I'd like to piggyback on something Dr. Stacy said. First of all, it's a myth that most scientists are disbelievers. That's not true. The majority of scientists are believers. And one of the reasons for that is a lawful universe. The second thing is this, and this is an irony. I think it's a great scientific irony. Because, as Dr. Stacy said, our knowledge is exploding exponentially, we are finding out that science is pointing us back to God. The fine-tuning of the universe in a massive number of variables belies any kind of chance explanation. The numbers for it to happen by chance are so infinitesimally small that chance is virtually ruled out. There has to be some kind of fine-tuning involved.
Well, I think that you do come to the point where you have to admit that there is a mystery that's involved in what it is that you are studying or in what it is that you're looking at. You come to that point where you can no longer try to take just a rational approach, a reasoning approach in terms of using the intellect and analysis and data collecting to try to take you to the next level. And yet there seems to be just a general denial of that within the culture of the day. Whereas you're sharing with us, Dr. Ray, that many scientists come to this point of recognition in the general culture of the day, which I think is just one that is a riddle, an absolute riddle of contradiction. We see this desire to hold on to this notion that science can take us wherever it is that we want to go. And we see people pushing the boundaries one after the other. What do you say, Father Dwight?
Well, I think one of the things I would like to propose as a priest, actually, is what is the answer to this? What is the answer to scientism, the idea that science has all the answers, and the idea that there is no knowledge other than scientific knowledge? And I come back and say, it's the Catholic faith, and only the Catholic faith within all of Christianity, which says there is a particular answer which we have to this problem, which nobody else does, and that is called the sacraments, okay? Science is saying God is separated from the created order. The material world has nothing to do with the immaterial world, even if there is such a thing. Catholicism says, no, actually, God pours his grace, in other words, the immaterial world, the spiritual world, is poured through and into our lives through the physical realm, through wine and water and bread and oil and laying on of hands. Through these physical means, the immaterial spiritual realm is communicated to us. And so the sacraments of the church are actually an answer or an antidote to the poison of scientism.
Mm-hmm. Stacy, share with us, if you would, how you bridged that gap in your own personal experience of seeing the world through the eyes of atoms and molecules, basically, as opposed to this broader reality of what it is that we live out every day.
It's very much seeing the fuller truth. I remember when I first started learning about dogmatic theology and I started understanding what we mean by the Trinity and the incarnation and the rational soul, I started to understand what it meant to be human. I started to know myself better, just like Pope St. John Paul II says in Fides et Ratio. I felt like I had a fuller sense of reality. So the Catholic Church didn't ask me to stop loving chemistry. I added to my love of chemistry because I came to realize that I was studying the handiwork of God, that science is the study of the handiwork of God. And then I thought it was really cool that I had this scientific knowledge because I felt like I understood something about the amazing mind of God, because you're so right, Johnette. A scientist, more than anyone, I think, is humbled by the order in the created world and the fine-tuning, like Dr. Ray was talking about. You're humbled by it. You know it's there. And when you become a believer, suddenly you know where that comes from, and it's pretty awe-inspiring.
Yeah, I've been asked to give a talk recently on the relevance of reverence, which is a nice sort of title. And I would say, following on from Stacy, that it's in reverent worship and the reverent liturgy that we actually come into the presence of Almighty God, our Creator, and we put ourselves in a relationship with Him in a ritualistic and in a beautiful liturgical way, which opens our hearts and our minds to the wonders of creation. And therefore, I would say, although I'm not a scientist, I would believe that that opens up the wonders of science and scientific study that much more as well.
Yes, excellent. Ray?
When I was struggling in my faith, when I was ready to leave my faith, I knew I had to answer the question, where is the evidence for God? So I started to ask and read and listen to the very most elite scientists in biochemistry, in chemistry, in astronomy, in biology. And what I found was the ones that really understood the unfathomable, mind-numbing complexity of everything, and that it couldn't have happened by chance, and the reason it couldn't is one thing, the Big Bang. Hmm. It put a lifetime on the universe. The universe was no longer seen as infinite. If you have an infinite universe, anything can happen. If you have a time-limited universe, you are now bound. Can these things occur within time limits? And many of the scientists came to the conclusion, ones who were former atheists, said they cannot.
Yes. Stacy, in your book, Particles of Faith, you mentioned the Big Bang. You spent quite a bit of time taking us through that journey, helping us to understand just what it is that Dr. Ray is saying.
Yeah, the Big Bang was discovered by a Catholic priest, by Father Lemaître, who proposed the Big Bang. And you have to put yourself kind of in his mindset. When he lived and when he was thinking about this, the prevailing cosmological theory at the time was the steady state theory, which held, like Dr. Ray said, that the universe is infinitely expanding. And so this Catholic priest knew that that was the prevailing theory, but he also knew that scientific theories are provisional, that they're subject to change when we learn more data, when we learn more about the universe. And he himself proposed that if we assume a beginning in time, because science can't prove a beginning in time, it can't prove something that's beyond time, because science deals with time and space, but he posited a beginning in time and the equations made sense. And now the Big Bang is the prevailing cosmological theory. There are, of course, other theories out there even now that still propose that the Big Bang was just a bounce and that there are more bounces, which is very much like the great year from the ancient Greeks, where there's an eternally cycling cosmos. And it gets back to the same problem of an infinite world, where if the world is infinite, then we're powerless to change anything because we're just born into whatever cycle we happen to be born into. Modern science was born of a Christian worldview because Catholic scholars, long before we usually say the scientific revolution occurred, Catholic scholars were defending the notion of a beginning in time and creation out of nothing.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this brings us back to what Holy Mother Church teaches us and Sacred Scripture says, doesn't it, Father Dwight?
Indeed, that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, which is right at the beginning of the Bible, in the beginning of all things. And so the Big Bang, which is actually supporting that, but not determined by that. In other words, it was determined by, as Stacy said, by scientists and through science, is coming back to teach us that we're all actually in time. We're all actually within that created order.
There is a wonderful confusion in science. C.S. Lewis, in his book Miracles, said, if there is no governing being, if there is no soul, then the chemicals in our brain, as scientists would say, we're nothing but our brain, are simply random. They are doing what they're doing, and we can't trust them because they're not guided by anything. So what we think are our accurate theories, we can't trust, because there is no way to know what we're thinking reflects reality, because our neurochemicals are just a complex random mishmash, if you will.
The very discipline that is your profession, Dr. Ray, psychology, what is psyche? The psyche is the soul. It's a study of the soul. It's a study of the nuances that go on within the human person and the faculties of the soul, the way emotions and these other faculties of the soul, the will, the intellect, play into our everyday activity. And yet there is nowhere that we can look or put under a microscope or begin to define, in a concrete way, soul, because it's not a concrete thing. It is something of another world. It's something that God gives to us by way of his generosity.
It is the great mystery. What, in fact, is consciousness? Mm-hmm. Why can I sit here and listen to your questions and come to logical, reasonable perspectives on the basis of directing my brain around? People will say, yes, but somebody has Alzheimer's, look what happens. Yeah, and I as a musician cannot play a piano that's not in tune. So my soul cannot play a brain that is not functioning or damaged.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Father Dwight?
I think the evidence for the soul, at the moment I'm working on research for a new book, which is called Angels Crashing, A Brief History of Transcendence. And one of the most amazing things I'm discovering is that right back to the very dawn of mankind, to the Paleolithic times and the Mesolithic times, the caveman times, we find that there is evidence in the human heart and the human mind of a belief in the other world, in the afterlife, and the man is religious. And therefore, this transcendence seems to be there as part of our created order, and the archaeological evidence and the anthropological evidence points this way all the time, that we are, some people say we're Homo sapiens, we're thinking beasts, and others would say, no, we're Homo orans, praying beasts.
So how is it then that we look at this belief that science holds all of the answers and fit that into the framework of the day and time in which we're living in, moving forward back to the great reality that the unknown is the unknown and it's mystery and it's God-driven? And I would ask you, Stacy, how do you reconcile your discipline, science, with these realities?
It's like all of you were saying, science points beyond itself. I mean, the more you know about science, the more you are compelled. And I think, just like Dr. Ray and Father Dwight were saying, the more you know about science, the more you're compelled to admit that God exists, that this world is created by a loving God. I actually think that science is our biggest tool for evangelization today. I think it's a way to meet the world where it is, to say as Catholics, we love science. Science was born of Christianity. The scientific method is the Catholic worldview, that we look at a rationally created universe created in love with a purpose, and we study it and not be afraid to learn about science, but then also press our fellow human beings on what, why do you think all of this is? Why do you think that there is this order here? And then help them face up to their own sins. I think God's not too far away for many people. I think God's probably too close for many people to be able to accept. And it's also scary. So meet them.
Also, scientism is most popularly expressed with the idea that science has disproved religion. And what most people mean by that is science has disproved a certain kind of religion, and that kind of religion is a superstitious religion, a legalistic religion, a religion which is tied up with myths and fairy tales and make-believe. And I'm afraid that we as religious people are very, very often cling to some of those errors that are a superstition in religion, rules and regulations in religion, which are ridiculous. And we also need to be able to present a view of religion and an intelligent understanding and apologetic for the religious point of view, so that those who want to dismiss it don't have any grounds to do so.
Mm-hmm. Was it St. Augustine who said, in effect, if science and religion, science and the Bible clash, we either misunderstand science or we misunderstand the Bible?
Mm. It's beautifully stated, isn't it? And, you know, Dr. Ray, I want to talk with you just for a moment about the great reality of the work that is involved in helping a person to move through the crises of life, the difficulties in life. When you have an individual who comes into your practice and visits with you, and you see that they have a very flawed idea of who God is, sometimes, you know, we know that some of the wounds that they've experienced within their nuclear family have caused a distorted view of God, if they've had a very difficult father relationship, or of our Blessed Mother, if they've had a very difficult relationship with their mother. But how do you help them to move forward into this encompassing reality of God's love for them?
In graduate school, it was pounded into me. You do not deal with religion. You do not ask about it. You do not probe it. Quickly, when I got into the real world of therapy, I found out that religion is very central for a lot of people. And if it isn't central, it's a source of confusion. And so it is easy to get people in therapy to talk about how their faith or lack thereof is part and parcel of the way that they live. So it's very legitimate to ask about these factors for people, because whether psychology says so or not, it is real for many, many people.
Yes, and I would imagine, and I know that this is true when it comes to physical difficulties, but people who have a strong life of faith generally tend to heal quicker and to heal better. And in those moments when they are approaching, you know, their final moments because of a disease, they are more at peace, and they experience a greater depth of consolation in heart, mind, and spirit.
The evidence is overwhelming. If your faith is a genuine, embracing, growing faith, the benefits are nearly limitless.
Mm-hmm. So, Father, then how is it that we can begin to communicate? As Stacy says, you know, that one of the greatest ways in which we can become evangelists today is through the reality of science, that we can be great evangelizers. How do we wed these together and help people to come to this appreciation of God's love for them, as well as for the benefit of allowing themselves to experience that love?
I'm very grateful for Dr. Ray's ministry and those others who have taken the plunge into psychology and psychiatry as Catholics, as Christians, to be able to understand the interface between our faith and our psychology. I'm not a psychologist, but I've done enough counseling training to be able to understand the depth and the power of that interface, and how much our faith can actually shed light on our psychology and shed light on our psychological problems. I'm impressed time and again as a pastor and a priest of the healing benefits of something as simple as the Our Father and the Rosary, the Hail Mary. So that if people, for instance, in psychological realm have mother and father wounds, that a deep prayer of the Our Father and the Hail Mary can actually function to actually heal some of those wounds, and so that our faith actually is working with the psychological insights to be able to bring the healing and the wholeness that people need.
Well, and you're reminding me of a beautiful, beautiful book that you wrote on the healing. It's a healing rosary, and I really want to encourage you, friends, to get a copy of that book, because I think that it can really begin to work through a lot of things. I'll mention this because I think that all of you will appreciate this little story. I have a friend who was raised in a very difficult setting. Her mother suffered from depression all of her life, postpartum depression, was part of the aftermath of giving birth to this child. And she talked about the fact that she never saw her mother smile at her. And you know, and science tells us today that one of the ways in which the neurons grow in the brain is through the light in the mother's eye. And so what makes the mother's eye light up? The delight that she has for her child. Well, if mother is in a state of depression, that light is not there. And so as this woman matured and came into, you know, her majority, married, had children of her own, she had issues with bonding with her children. And this impacted her capacity and other interpersonal relationships as well. And she thought that there was no help for her. But as she was praying the rosary one day, she was praying the Hail Holy Queen. And we know that prayer so well, Hail Holy Queen. It goes on and talks about, "Turn then, most gracious advocate, thine eyes of mercy towards us." And she realized that in that prayer, if she prayed and she asked Our Lady to turn her motherly eyes towards her, that perhaps our mother's delight would be something that could bring about a healing in her. And lo and behold, she made great advances in all of these ways. So we can never, never, never diminish the great reality of faith in our lives, nor can we set it to the side. We have to, as you say, integrate it into the way in which we look at the world, the way in which we look at ourselves, the way in which we look at the problems of the world, the way in which we look at our own problems. I'll give you each about 30 seconds for closing words. Stacey, we'll start with you.
I just want to say how thankful I am for Dr. Ray and Father Dwight and Johnette for teaching people about the Catholic faith, because it is true what they say about the fuller truth. I felt very much like the woman at the well who once I had the encounter with Christ and once I started learning about Catholic teaching and accepting it in my own life, I just wanted to run off and tell everyone about it. And it breaks my heart that people don't know how wonderful it is to understand yourself as body and rational soul, made in the image and likeness of a loving God who comes to meet us in every Mass. So thank you all for talking about these issues, and I hope it helps a lot of people.
Thank you so much, Stacey. Ray?
I would say that science will inevitably point closer and closer to God. The reason people cling to science is not because they're not looking at the evidence, because the evidence would point them to God. It's because they don't want to have to surrender their very selves. They mistakenly believe they would lose freedom rather than gaining it.
I think you've hit a nail on the head right there. Father Dwight.
Yeah, I would say that we're talking about the solution being that of what I would call practical mysticism. Mm-hmm. And people believe in scientism and materialism because they want to believe that this is the only world that there is. But through contemplative prayer, through reverent liturgical worship, we actually enter into a mystical frame of mind and frame of soul. And that actually puts us in connection with our Creator, and therefore opens up our heart and our mind and our whole being to the wonders of creation and the wonders of God's love at the same time, in a way which is really beyond words. But your experience that you've shared of your friend and the healing rosary is one of those things that I call practical mysticism, where ordinary people can enter into the life of faith and the life of God's healing through the very practical means which the Catholic Church gives us, through the sacraments and through the rosary and through our devotionals.
Dr. Ray, Dr. Stacey, Father Dwight, thank you so very much for accepting our invitation. It's wonderful having had you with us today. And thank you for joining us today. We'll see you next week here on the Catholic Sphere.